On this podcast, we share a lot of stories, and often the mental health aspect of the work we do creeps in. If you think you might be feeling depressed, stressed, anxious, or even overwhelmed, please consider visiting our sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and help you. And they even have therapists who specifically work with first responders. You just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. You can talk to your therapist in a private and online environment at your convenience. Many first responders work rotating and often odd schedules, so this format makes it really easy to talk to someone when it's convenient for you. If you don't click with your therapist, you can request a new one at no additional charge anytime. Join the 3 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Rhody. That's betterhelp.com/Rhody, R-O-A-D-I-E. You can also find the link in the show notes.
You got to find a way to not really forget the memories, but know how to deal with them.
On the trolley side, just a little bit of fire lit.
They clear a path. I say, holy cow, they made a path for us.
If you put a couple of first responders together in a room, something interesting happens. Before too long, they'll begin sharing stories. They're not trying to one-up each other. They're simply finding common ground. I was fortunate enough to serve my community as a paramedic and a firefighter for over 25 years. As you can imagine, during that time, I acquired my fair share of stories about the incidents and the calls I was involved in. I thought I might write a book, but then I decided sharing these stories collectively in a podcast would give anyone listening an insider's view into the work that first responders do every single day. These are the stories of the men and women who courageously serve the public. Or as I like to call them, Stories from the Road. Welcome back to Stories from the Road. I'm your host, Phil Klein, and today I'm joined with paramedic Alexis. And Alexis has had a relatively short career in EMS, but she's got a couple of really good stories. So aside from the first one that she's going to tell today, I hope I can get her to come back on the podcast and tell another one later on. So Alexis, I'll turn the mic over to you and let you share your story from the road.
Phil. Good to see you. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of the podcast. That's kind of how I got in touch with you. So huge fan. Happy to be here. I don't have like the long line of first responders and firefighters and paramedics, all that. Like my grandfather in Louisiana was a state trooper in the Catahoula and Concordia parishes. If you don't know where that's at, don't feel bad. I don't either. I can't even pinpoint on the map, but neither here nor there. So he was also in the Marines. He has the cool bulldog, or he had the cool bulldog tattoo to prove it, was very proud of it. My dad worked as a police officer for about 26 plus years, just recently retired. Police officer, detective, made rank as a lieutenant for Baton Rouge City Police. And like he worked tons of overtime, as we all do. But like he gave our family the best that he could provide, and working extra duty on holidays and all of the things, the overtime, the myriad of the hours, just so that we could have our yearly family vacations, and making sure that he could give us the best that he could. And looking back, it was always like, oh, well, dad's working into Christmas morning. Love that for us. Now we got to stay in our rooms for a couple of hours. But now it's like, wow, my dad is not only a hero, but a shining knight in armor. Like, can never thank him enough. So growing up, like I would always see my dad in uniform leaving the house in the mornings or coming home late at night. And I was always excited to tell people like, yeah, my dad's a cop, which apparently you're not supposed to say cop. I didn't know that till I was like probably 17 and I mentioned it. And my dad was like, yeah, it's police officer, but oh, well, sorry, dad. But like, it never really hit me how dangerous or like how intense the job was, because my dad never talked about it. He would never kind of bring up stories or talk about like calls and stuff, because, and I get it, when you're home, you're home, you're away from that environment. So I never got like the whole inside look into what he does. I never got the full picture. But my dad transferred at one point into juvenile sex crimes, and that's hard stuff. That is very hard stuff. but he always shielded my family away from it. Even my mom, like there were very few select times when he would kind of talk in very small segments and very brief glimpses into what he was working on, because it weighed on him, and naturally so. But one night when I was super young still, I was already asleep. He came home late, and per usual, I mean, it's part of the job, but I just remember I woke up and my dad like was hugging me and just crying. And it's one of like the two times I've ever heard my dad cry. So from that, like as a child, and knowing that my dad, even still to this day, I don't know how, but he is the most patient and even tempered man on this planet, despite working in law enforcement in Baton Rouge for so many years and working in all of these jobs. And it just, from that, I took like, okay, well, I'm not going to be a first responder ever in my life, because if I come home like that, why would I sign up for that? Nope. And then in 2016, with all the riots of that were happening at that time, my dad had actually trained one of the officers involved in that. So as it progressed, my dad had to work those riots, and it hit me like whenever he came home and he was talking about just the things that he was seeing and hearing about everything on the news, I was like, well, no, I never want to be a first responder. I never want to do that. My dad is in danger literally on a daily basis. So my dad could die because of this job. So it's going to be a no for me. Progressed to high school and college. I got an English degree. I started teaching high school English, did that and hated it. Love my kids. The education system is so broken. And through lots of soul searching, and it's not my proudest moment. I went in the classroom. My kids are coming in. Good morning, Miss Hardwick. And I'm like, good morning, guys. As I'm teaching literally in the hood, like rolled up. I think it was that morning. It was the final straw. I rolled up and there's crime scene tape around my parking spot because somebody got shot the night before. So I was like, oh, love this for me. I love that my kids are walking into school like this. It was traumatic for me. So my kids are coming in and I'm like, you know what? I can't do this. I'm not cut out for this. So I grabbed my keys, put them on the principal desk. And she was like, Miss Hardwick, where are you going? I said, away. Never coming back. Good luck, you guys. So I left and I was like, okay, cool. I'll just go get some coffee and I'll figure this out. And I didn't. And then COVID hit. So it's like, oh, great. What do I do now? The world is actually ending. My career has ended. So in all of this, I'm like, I needed to do something to help. Like that's always been my passion, is just like, I need to help people in any way that I can, make an impact, whatever, save the world. No, I'm just kidding. So I was like, I'll just go back to school and be a nurse. Side note, I have never been and never will be cut out to be a nurse. I don't have it in me. It takes a very special person to do that. I am not the one. So in my mind, I'm like, no big deal, whatever. I'll just go back to school. So I went and I took an EMT class. And the whole point was to go be an ER tech, go from there. But I went on my first ride time on the ambulance and we didn't have anything crazy. Like we had a psych or two. And, you know, that was very eye-opening, but nothing like we're out there doing chest compressions and kicking down doors and snatching babies out of cars, like nothing like that. We didn't do any of that. But it's just that interaction with the patients. And that's what set me off in this career. It's never been like, I felt like this job has been my calling, but it's understanding like the few friends I had in EMS, I felt like I understood what they meant or tried to warn me about rather when they talked about how this job chooses you. Never wanted to be a first responder, never wanted to come home crying or have all of this stuff that weighs on you. But even after that shift, just being dead tired, mentally exhausted, very hungry, I felt that purpose. And even just like after just those few calls, it draws you in. There's no other way to explain it. If you're not an EMS or a first responder, fire, police, whatever, it all just draws you in. And the rest is history. So I got my EMT in August of 2020 and started paramedic school. And I just got my paramedic patch in January of this year. So yes, I am a fetus of a medic still. I don't.
That's one way to put it.
Like, I feel like I know what I'm doing, but at the same time, I'm like, man, why is no one still holding my hand?
For what it's worth, I think it takes a good year before you're comfortable doing anything.
That makes me feel better because, like, some days I'm like, man, I've got this. And then, like, the shift from yesterday, I came home this morning. I'm like, I don't think I've got this. I think someone should put me on another ride time. I don't think this is it. But I started in rural EMS in Louisiana. But since March of this year, on top of getting my paramedic patch, moved states. My husband and I moved to southern Utah, and it's been quite a ride already. Quite a culture shock, to say the least. But here we are, boys, ready for the ride.
Well, go ahead and jump in and share your story with me.
I just want to preface, like, in this call, everybody's had calls that, like, after, while you're cleaning the back or you're clearing from the hospital, you get back to the station, if you make it there, you got to take that breath. And I'll raise my hand and say, I'm one of the first ones that I have cried in the back. And I think it's completely fine because we are still human. At the end of the call, at the end of every shift, you are a human being. And it's not that you can't compartmentalize, because to a certain degree, I think you've said it before, you have to get through the calls. It's this job that weighs on you. But kind of like it's been a consistent theme through most of the episodes, like, it's the ones that hit you later on after the hype and the adrenaline dies down. Those are the ones that stick with you. And it's the calls that make their way, in my mind, like, they make their way back to you. You can get through them. You're fine. Even like like the emotions don't even hit you, which is kind of what happened on this call. But like, they always find a way to circle back around. And love this job. Despite all the reservations I had for pretty much most of my life, I really do love this job. I love having like new hires and students because it's the difference of having someone who genuinely still is passionate about this job versus a salty medic like I had, who just, like, on one of my first rides, they clock in, they clock out, they don't give a rip. But being able to break that stigma, and if I didn't have some of the positive impacts of providers that I've had since I've gotten into EMS from the get-go, I wouldn't have lasted in this field after this call. So here we go. And this is like probably the third or fourth time I've ever actually talked about this call. So here we go, boys. I can't remember the specific date. It was in the cusp of Hurricane Laura and all the devastation that reigned with it. And it was so much going on in Louisiana as a whole. And that part of Louisiana was getting hit like back to back. Just like, there was no in between. There was no resting points. It was pretty brutal. The agency I was with, we got sent out to New Orleans through the Federal Emergency Aid and be like a deployment and send out resources to that area. So we were told, yeah, you'll be running 911 calls, because that's what they did during the COVID outbreak, and I was so stoked. Dude, I was still so green, toying around with the idea of like, do I want to go to paramedic school? Should I wait longer? So we're headed up there, and no, we were in vambulances, and that's just one of the first starts of like why this call was devastating. So we were getting info that like people were overdosing left and right. People were getting shot in like these hotels that they were all staying in and like all of this stuff. And the EMS agencies, they were running out of Narcan and like everything that my new trauma shears on my belt were like drooling over. So I'm stoked the whole way up there. I'm like, I had a Code 3 playlist going, and my partner, who was not as green as me, was like, you've got to calm down. You've got to like slow down. I'm like, dude, this is going to be epic. Then we get there, and basically we ended up being like a first aid station, and we were placed at like what they kept calling posts into these hotels that like they'd send people from either New Orleans, like Charles, Shreveport, even like some of the parts of Texas to these hotels because they got evacuated and then there was nowhere to go. Like, they can't go home. There are places that like their home is destroyed. There are roads that we can't access. Like, there is nowhere to go. So they were put up in these hotels and everybody's just kind of communing together. And so they posted us pretty much in the like this back conference room on the second floor. And we were told to just sit there and wait. And if there was an emergency, we would contact this certain dispatch area, whatever. They'd send somebody and another agency would come and transport. So we weren't even along for the ride. And to say that was, I don't know, man, it made no sense to me. It's above my pay grade. Like, there was one point we were literally like, we had this nice little view of the city on our second floor, little conference area, whatever. And I sat at the window and watched an entire call happen where this guy passed out on the road. And like one of the agencies came, they picked him up and like police were there, all this stuff. And there's me with my face pressed to the window, like watching all of it happen, one solid little tear like trickling down my face because I'm like, I wish that was me. But here we are sitting and like aside from the random drunk stumbling in, there's nothing. It's dead. So for these post assignments, and this is important, we were staying at like this little Airbnb that our agency had us kind of hold up in at night. And then when we went to our post the next morning, we'd leave from the little Airbnb to go to that purgatory of a hotel area. And so me and my partner, we get our stretcher from the Vambulance, put all of our bags all up on it, everything we need, a couple of other pieces of equipment. And while we're posted up, I'm sitting there like going through every bag, reading every protocol. So the day that the call happened, I'm sitting there stewing on everything of being there at a post, everything I thought this would be. And my partner and I ended up watching a movie. While we're doing that, there was a woman who, she was exiting the elevator, going down into the main hotel lobby area. As soon as the door opened, she's like screaming and yelling about a baby. And they eventually calm her down, and she's only able to get out between all of her hyperventilating breaths and passing out that her baby's drowning. It's on the fourth floor, room number blank. So they send out the on-call officers of the location, and the hotel staff come looking for us. And granted, again, we have the entire stretcher. We have all this equipment, a couple of bags. And so when the hotel member like came up to where we were, they got out what had happened as they were like also out of breath. My partner for this deployment, who I was not used to working with, he looks at me and he just says, "You go, I'll bring everything. You'll get there faster." So I ran down the hallway, ran up two flights, bolted out the doors of this stairwell, and literally just started running all the way down the hall to this room. I get close and I see a bunch of officers, and like their hands are in their pockets. They're just standing outside the room. And like they have that look of like, there's nothing going on. And I'm trying to process all of this. And I'm getting this weird, bad feeling from the get-go, seeing them like that. But I mean, when your adrenaline's rushing that hard, you can't even see straight. So there's no logical thinking. I push past them and I run into the bathroom. And like, I knew it was hopeless from the get-go. But again, there's no logical thinking catching up because as far as I know, a baby's drowning. So I grabbed the towel that was on the counter and I reached in and like there's the bathtub's halfway full and it's a 3 or 4 month old baby. And I'm not thinking like the baby can't even sit up straight. So I grabbed the towel, grabbed the baby, and I knew as I'm doing these chest compressions that I've pretty much just been taught from EMT school that even though she's a darker complexion of the race that she's at, she's purple. And even though she's stiff and she's cold, and every chest compression I'm doing, it's not helping. Nothing we can do right now can help. And she shouldn't weigh that heavy, but like she's so bloated. Why is she naked? Why is she? None of that's going through. So I'm just at this point, I'm just holding this baby up to my up to my shoulder, and I still don't know why I did it, but it. Anything to try to help. I don't know. Maybe I can like put my heartbeat into I don't know. So I'm just doing that. And it was a solid 3 or 4 minutes. So the guy in deployment that I was working with, he comes up behind me and he's yelling my name. And it wasn't until he starts just like shaking my shoulders that he tells me like, this is a crime scene. You have to stop. And there's nobody that prepares you to hear the words crime scene and this image of this small baby in the same sentence. There's no one to prepare you for that. So eventually I just gave the baby back to the officer and I left the room, and that was it. I didn't have a meltdown. I didn't go into the hallway and start crying. I walked back to that room and my shirt's still soaking wet with dead baby fluids and stagnant water and God knows what else. And I sat back in the chair that I had already put it up by the window, put my headphones on, and I just looked out the window for, I want to say, 5 or 6 hours straight. Someone eventually came and brought me like a clean shirt, and like I changed, and I didn't feel sad. I didn't feel angry. I just felt nothing. My partner, he never said anything about it. Later that night, when we met up with everybody at the hotel, at the Airbnb we were staying at, like we didn't even talk about it. Everybody kind of went out to eat that night, and I went to bed. Like there was nothing else to do. I half expected to walk into the bathroom to shower that night and like see something or start feeling something, but nothing happened. Like there was no revolutionary moment where everything hits you and all at once or whatever. And even the next day, like I traced my steps back from where we were posted up to where that event happened. And we were almost exactly 2 floors from that location. We'd been sitting all morning where it all went down. And like even that, I felt like it should have affected me, but like I still felt just so numb. And we went back home. And I didn't tell anybody about it. I didn't feel the need to talk about it to anybody because I'm like, okay, well, I guess this isn't the thing that breaks me. I guess this is a part of it. I don't know. This is EMS, I guess. I don't know. So couple weeks later, time passes by, going on other calls, being in EMS. And we had a call where we showed up. It was a patient who fell in a shower at a hotel. Nothing happened, no biggie, nothing crazy, nothing got me. And we got back to the station. I tried to fall asleep, per usual. But I woke up from that little nap screaming, and I was like soaked in sweat because I relived that entire call with that baby in that dream. And like when I woke up, like I felt like the baby was in my arms again. And my partner came in and he's like, are you okay? And I'm like, where's the baby? Like, where's the mom? Where do we? And I ended up having to go home that night because my partner called the supervisor and he's like, hey, something's really not okay. Like she won't talk to me, whatever. Cause like, it's that realization of everything. It's the smells were in the room. I'm wearing that uniform shirt again. Like everything just, like all at once, and I was not ready. So I went home. I downed about half a bottle of NyQuil. I woke up and I was fine until, and like still to this day, since this moment, like if I'm not mentally at my best, like I'll pull the shower curtain back. And like it happened, I went home and like pulled the shower curtain back, and there's the baby in the tub. And there's like a lot of details legally I'm leaving out. And basically what transpired to that event was this mom had met these guys in this hotel and she let them in her room. And like a bunch of stuff went on with this baby in this room. And it came down to like someone of the room, still not sure who it is. They had a bunch of drugs. They were all wasted. And the mom like fell asleep while these guys were in her room. And horrible, horrible things happened to this baby, like unspeakable things that, I mean, I'm sorry, but only a monster of a human can do to a baby, 3 or 4 months old. So when the baby wouldn't wake up, they ran some bathwater in and dropped her in and they left. It's all on tape, but the mom was so out of it apparently, and she passed out. She woke up. It was probably a solid 5 or 6 hours later, and that's where her baby is. And the only parts that I know from that there was an officer who reached out to me a couple months later and kind of, he kept me updated on everything. And he's saying like, yeah, I'm not sleeping well. If this helps, have, you know, some resolution, some kind of conclusion, but like, you know, he's like, I want to just try to help you out with this. But how do you help with this? Like, I mean, and just blatant honesty, I still don't know what to do with this call. Like people went to jail. Yeah. Justice was served, but it doesn't make it any better. And again, it's part of the job. Like there's no resolution. There's a result of either our actions that have like happy endings or the results of aspects way out of our control. And maybe we don't get follow-up after a call and it sucks. And it's hard to, it was just hard to learn that so early into this career. Like not only was this awful, but this was my first pediatric call. And knowing that this happened two floors above where we were, I think we were talking about beignets, like good places to eat beignets. And all of this is going on two floors above us. And like, I was still so early into this career and I literally would drive home after the whole, like having to be sent home. And then like, I think the next day, whenever it was, like pulling the shower curtain back and just seeing that baby, like I'm thinking to myself, like what else could be waiting on me? What else could possibly be next from this job? This is why I didn't want to go into this field more than helping people. Like this is the thing that I carry with me for now on. But again, like I said earlier, I have a wonderful support system and I would hope to God everybody else could have just 1 ounce of just what I've been so blessed with. But I had a medic tell me straight to my face, one of the few people I've told about this call until this moment. He told me, almost quote, if this is the thing that destroys you, what would have been the use? Like, yeah, it was traumatic and you have every right to be upset, but all of this time invested would have been an utter waste. And it's fine that this call affected you. It just means that you're still human and it's probably going to follow you for a long time. Not going to sugarcoat that. But being proficient in your skills, being empathetic, and remembering why you signed up for this job, for any and everything, every time you put the uniform on, this is what you sign up for. But going into every call, no matter how low the priority is, or however much you want to say you don't need an ambulance, having compassion and empathy will take you so much further. You can't control things that are out of your perspective, but you can help from where you find them. And like, whew, it was a lot. Many tears were shed. But I mean, now like I'm past like the 2-year marker of being in EMS as a whole. And I do imagine this is going to be the thing that follows me for the rest of my career. But I mean, everything he said was so solid because like we can push meds, we can make someone feel less lonely. We can cut people out of cars, get ROSC, or just make a PB&J after diabetic wake-up call. But everything we do, it all matters. And so, like, even if, like, this call, like we're not gods. We can't save them all. These are the things that we can't control. And, I mean, yeah, people's lives are impacted solely on their own accord or what somebody else's actions rendered them. And there are so many elements out of our control. There are things that we're not capable of doing a single thing about. But like in that call, the only thing I feel like that has saved my career besides that little monologue that was solid, that we never could have known what was going on. And when it was brought to anyone's attention, it was too late. No matter how much I tried to bring this baby back, like she's not coming back. So what I took away is you can't save them all, but we can still do something. If it's not on that call, it is for somebody else. And we can't let ourselves continue to metaphorically drag these wooden crosses of this battlefield of a job with us. And yes, some of them are going to follow us. And it's okay to not be okay, but if these are the reasons why you quit, you're missing out on the next person that needs you. So like focusing on the bad outcomes, which we typically do. I mean, it's those things that, well, I could have done this faster or I should have done this or whatever. you're not letting like those good deeds and wins amount to anything. They just, they fall nil to the ground. And basically even just to one patient, no matter the smallest or the biggest thing you did, it makes an impact. We couldn't do anything for this baby, but there's going to be someone else who we can do something for.
Well, Alexis, thank you for sharing that story. That is a horrific story. And to be such a young and new EMT to have to deal with that, my hat's off to you. And just for having the courage to move on after a call like that, you know, I think that would have shaken a lot of medics with 10, 20, even 30 years of experience. So to handle that at such a early time in your career says a lot about you and a lot about the person that you are. And I'm really glad to hear that you have a support system in place, because that sounds like one of those calls. And I know it is one of those calls that, like you said, is going to stay with you for a long time. And it's one of the ones that's probably going to eat at you for a long time too. So I'm really glad that you have some folks in your life that, you know, you can talk through this particular call and the other ones that come your way, because I feel like you're going to have a long career ahead of you. Your heart's certainly in it, and I hope calls like this don't end up eating you up.
Yeah, me too, man. Thank you.
Well, thanks for being on the podcast, and I hope that you'll come back and share another call with us, maybe one that's not so horrific, but you never know. I know what you have in mind, so we'll see how that goes.
Thanks for having me, my guy.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a minute and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcast platform you're listening on. Stories from the Road is a Brown Dogs Media Group production. This one-man show is written, edited, and produced by Phil Klein. If you have a story you would like to share, please contact us at storiesfromtheroadpodcast@gmail.com. To learn more about this or other podcasts we're producing, please visit browndogsmedia.com. Thank you for listening.